We're talking about disinformation purposely spreading falsehoods and misinformation, which may be spread unknowingly. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and it comes at us fast. The New York Times reported at President Trump's rally in Janesville this month, he made 131 false or inaccurate statements in 90 minutes. And they said many were entirely made up. Others were casual misstatements of simple facts, some clearly intended to mislead, unquote. What misinformation have you come across? How is it spread by the people in your life? How do you respond? We're at 800-642-1234. Howard Hardy is election integrity reporter with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism and a fellow at First Draft, which trains journalists to detect and report on disinformation. Howard, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me.
And Kathleen Culver is here, the James E. Burgess Chair in Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison and Director of the Center for Journalism Ethics. Katie, welcome back to you.
Thanks so much for having us. Happy to be here.
Well, Katie, let's start with you. Tell us about the Election Integrity Project and how it came to be.
Well, we this summer were focused on Wisconsin and the spread of mis and disinformation in Wisconsin. And we really wanted to do our best to empower voters with a nonpartisan approach and to mis and disinformation. And so we got together with Howard and the Wisconsin Watch, and we focused on this kind of three-pronged effort. So one, the investigative journalism that Howard is doing, and then also creating two toolkits, one for journalists to try to stem the tide of this kind of polluted information, and then another one for citizens so that they can think about what to believe, what not to believe, and importantly, what to share and what not to share.
And that can get really complicated really fast. I mean, there's so many things that you need to think about when you are looking at your social media feed or the information that you're reading online. You know, Howard, you wrote this toolkit for us and we're bombarded with information every day. How can we possibly sort through everything?
From my perspective, the Election Integrity Project is all about giving people tools to navigate the social web on their own. I think people are frustrated about this deluge of disinformation they see on Facebook and Twitter and TikTok, and they're hungry for resources that help them make sense of it all. So the Election Integrity Project strives to help people make reality-based decisions and form opinions that have good factual standing, rather than building a worldview that's based on internet rubbish.
And one of those things, Howard, is to let news outlets earn your trust. What is that journey like to earn trust?
Well, I think earning trust is a big component of it is being visible in your community, just being a local reporter who's about town and is accessible to readers and listeners and viewers. I think that just goes a really long way to be a recognizable figure that people can get to know and get to trust over time.
But local journalism is also really drying up. So how do you look at that? Because a lot of the information out there may be coming from across the country or halfway around the world.
Yeah, that's a really big concern for us here at the Election Integrity Project. We're especially in central and northern Wisconsin, we have some news deserts where maybe that region only has one or two newspapers or doesn't have one at all. And, you know, let alone a weekly newspaper that's kind of shoring up that coverage. With the fate of local news, I think is really critically important to stemming the tide of mis and disinformation on social media.
Talking with Howard Hardy, election integrity reporter with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Katie Culver is here, director of the Center for Journalism Ethics. We're learning how to track false and misleading content, how to be better news consumers. Join in with your insights, 800-642-1234. Katie, there is an attitude shift, too, as you approach news information, a shift in attitude as you kind of digest the news, being skeptical and not cynical. What do you see there?
I think that's such a critical point that, you know, when something comes at us, when information comes at us, if we react emotionally, if we meet it with cynicism, if we meet it with white hot anger, that's when your alarm bells should really go off. And I think we all fall victim to this. You get infuriated by something and you hit the anger emoji and you share it. That's when all of us need to slow down. Anything that is designed to hit you emotionally should make you the most skeptical. I also want to just note something about what Howard mentioned with news deserts. These news deserts are dangerous to us as citizens. There's some research showing that when news outlets are missing in communities, polarization grows. We move apart. And that's often because we're relying on social media and in these echo chambers that just reinforce our own worldviews. So as hard as it may be in local communities, particularly rural areas in Wisconsin, we have to take that extra step to try to get a balanced information diet.
We heard from Jeff from Menominee, called in, couldn't stay with us. And Jeff says, President Trump says almost everyone is recovering from the coronavirus. Has that been fact-checked, and is it true? Howard, can you field that?
Well, it's kind of similar to the claim that Senator Ron Johnson made just last week that Wisconsin had effectively flattened the COVID curve, which... considering that we're at the height of the pandemic here in Wisconsin, and
what we think is the height of the pandemic.
Correct. The height of the pandemic to date, I should say. That is a demonstrably false claim, and it has been fact-checked repeatedly.
Another thing I want to bring up, Katie, is the misinformation swirling about mail-in voting. And even the president has had his posts flagged by Twitter and Facebook as being inaccurate. And I want to ask you about when that happens and the impact of that. When even the president is spreading false information, how can people combat that?
I have so much empathy for citizens right now, to be honest. You know, all the information that comes at you, this fire hose of information, and so much of it false. When we have figures like the President of the United States or U.S. Senator or mayor or police chief, whatever, when people in positions of leadership spread this disinformation and misinformation, who are we supposed to believe, and how are we supposed to counteract that? I do think that there are some tools like the Election Integrity Project, like local journalism, national journalism. And I think people have to try to turn to those outlets and believe what is reported rather than what someone says off the top of their head at a rally or in some kind of political statement. But that's not, you know, that puts all of the onus on us as people trying to live our lives. I think we also have to start talking a lot more about the ethical obligations of these public figures. You know, journalism ethics ain't just for journalists anymore. We should demand of our political leaders, of our celebrities, of our business leaders and communities, that they are also out there trying to reinforce the truth. Coronavirus is a perfect example of this. You know, if we are spreading misinformation, that information can be lethal.
We're looking at the spread of misinformation and disinformation with Katie Culver, who directs the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison. Howard Hardy here, election integrity reporter for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Have you shared information online only to discover that it was incorrect, not true? Did you take the post down or acknowledge it was incorrect? What happened? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Less than a week to Election Day, could disinformation ramp up even more? We're talking about how to combat the flood of falsehoods, if you will, here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last month, two House members wrote to FBI Director Christopher Wray asking him to investigate the origins of disinformation flooding South Florida. There has been evidence of this happening as well in Wisconsin. What ads are you seeing crossing your path? Do you find them distorting the truth as across the line? Join in at 800-642-1234. Katie Culver directs the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison, and Howard Hardy is election integrity reporter for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, and they stay with us. So, Howard, one of the tips that you have is to mix it up, to mix up your sources of news. What do you suggest? Because that, too, can be difficult to do.
Well, I'd always just recommend going to primary sources. You know, go to the homepage of a trusted newspaper or radio station in Wisconsin, or, you know, visit the website of a national news outlet that you've followed for years and have grown to trust. I think it's important for news outlets to earn our trust, as we mentioned earlier, but also for us to be willing to place our trust in them, because propagandists would have us believe that nothing can be trusted, and they would prefer that we throw up our hands and just kind of give up on this notion of noble truth. So I think it's important for us to be you know, open-minded as we go about finding reliable sources.
Frank from Fort Atkinson called, couldn't stay with us. And Frank's aunt was sending Frank emails with bad information. And Frank started sending her back articles, fact-checking her information. And then she stopped sending those emails. Katie, especially when this involves a relative or someone close to us, what do you do to, you know, have that conversation about stopping the spread of misinformation?
I think it's really important to approach it again with empathy, that, you know, this person sending this to you isn't some sort of, you know, like maniacal person trying to spread this information. That person has been manipulated by someone who's purposely trying to pollute the information environment. So Frank's aunt she's been duped by someone. And so to respond to her politely and carefully and, you know, with an open heart, I think it's really important. You know, the minute we get into kind of that cynicism and anger, you know, the hair on fire emoji in response, that's when we break down our opportunity to deliberate. You know, I hope that he and his aunt are emailing about other things, not about that misinformation. But I think it's good for him to have responded, because once we stop talking, that's when all hope is lost.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, why should we engage at all? Is there a threat when we just stop, turn it off, and don't respond at all?
I think there is a big threat of that you say, I give up. And we have, again, research that shows us that when people feel this polluted information environment, they can get confused, they can get demoralized, and then they lose their power as citizens. And that's really what we're talking about here, is, you know, being stripped of your power in a democracy. Anything that tries to get you mentioned disinformation in South Florida is also happening quite a bit in Detroit, trying to get people not to turn out to the polls. And that's ultimately what people are wanting to do. And this doesn't just matter politically, it matters in all sorts of sectors of your life. So your health, your finances, all of that. So I think it's important to, as Howard said, you know, balance things out, change things up, seek different sources so that you do feel empowered.
Katie Culver directs the Center for Journalism Ethics. Howard Hardy is election integrity reporter with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. We're learning about the Election Integrity Project, an effort to develop resources for news consumers, for journalists, with your insights, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Cassie, who's joining us from Sparta. Hi, Cassie. Are you there, Cassie?
Yes, I am.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess my question, a comment and question, is kind of directed toward Katie. So I've seen, you know, very frequently people share things on social media that do and obviously end up turning out to be false. And then, you know, there was brought up before, you know, should they take that down, you know, in news terminology, retract that? I guess I'm wondering, what do you feel is, you know, the damage and the implication of sharing too early, and how difficult is it to, once it's out there, people really believe it, and retracting it, just kind of like retracting a story or having a correction, you know, really is hard to do. So I guess I'm wondering your thoughts on that.
Well, I think there's a difference between some of us as individuals with just our small followings and these opinion leaders like politicians or corporate leaders. For us, I think it's fine to say, I put a tweet out there, it was incorrect, I apologize, and you know, next time I'll slow down. For our leaders, though, I think it's important for them to retract, of course, but also for platforms to be mindful of this reach. Kate mentioned earlier mis- and disinformation about ballots, about mail-in ballots and voting. And you have seen particularly TikTok and Twitter, and to some extent Facebook, really taking that sort of mis- and disinformation seriously. You know, I have a friend who's a political scientist who says, you know, this is an unusual, bizarre year, but it's a fairly typical election. We have people requesting more mail-in voting, but we still have the same trained electors. They have sworn duties. They will count the ballots. It's going to take a little bit longer, we expect, but it's going to be a free and fair election in the United States. So we shouldn't fall victim to that kind of mis- and disinformation. And to the extent that someone is sharing that this is somehow a fraudulent election, they do need to retract it.
Do you find that news organizations issue those retractions when they, you know, maybe inadvertently got the story wrong?
Sure. I mean, we see news organizations doing that all the time. But I have to say, it's a pretty good situation with, you know, news organizations that are trying to do this right. They generally do. The reporting works out. Now, we have some huge stories where they've gone wrong, and that's been damaging to trust. I will never argue otherwise. But overall, most community news organizations are providing information that their citizens can rely on to make decisions in their lives. They may disagree. We often interpret bias in the news, but overall, it's providing me what I need to have my family, to have my job, to be healthy, and to be able to vote.
Let's bring in Mark now in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, when we were all kids, we all heard Chicken Little say that the sky was falling. And, you know, remember that went viral in the farmyard. So everybody heard that, right? We were supposed to all learn to use common sense at that time, but I guess we've forgotten that. 2 days ago, I heard an ad on the radio that basically said that a certain candidate believed in the Green New Deal. And if you go with the Green New Deal, you're going to increase your utility bills by $40,000. Now, if that's true, I'm going to go out and buy every utility stock I can get. Right? So anyway, that was one of the more outlandish ads I've heard. And I thought immediately, how ridiculous could that be? But some people probably believe it.
Howard, what do you make of these outlandish claims that you see in the ads like Mark brought up?
Yeah, I mean, again, a lot of empathy for Mark and other social media users and radio listeners and TV viewers who are coming across these really misleading and sometimes just blatantly false advertising. Quite frankly, Facebook specifically hasn't been very good at policing its own platform when it comes to political ads. We see even when an ad has been flagged as misleading or false, that textually identical ads that contain the same core message but are maybe tweaked very slightly or are presented at a different URL are allowed to continue spreading online. So It's a really big problem, and as Katie mentioned before, I think we really need to be thinking about holding our public elected officials and also these platforms to a higher standard.
Katie, as we start to wrap up, what type of misinformation are you looking for or watching for to unfold, after the general election, after Tuesday?
Yeah, well, that's the giant question, right? How long is it going to take us to know the results of the election? You know, a lot of Americans are used to knowing that on election night or the following morning. We really could have a different situation this year because of the amount of mail-in balloting and early balloting, depending on what state you're in, by the way. It varies from state to state what can be counted and when. So I'm watching for mis and disinformation like that. And also importantly, any misinformation that tries to foment civil unrest in the aftermath of this. And I think it is critically important for journalists to be reporting responsibly if we do have protests, if there is any unrest in response. I'm really hoping that we're all like Mark and we don't listen to Chicken Little and we accept the results of a free and fair election, whether our candidate prevailed or not. I really hope that that's where we're at.
Thank you both for joining us. Katie Culver directs the Center for Journalism Ethics, Howard Hardy with an election integrity reporter. We have a link, by the way, to their toolkit at wpr.org/mornings. News update is next on the Ideas Network.